The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And in studio with me, I have the author of Strategy to Action, Dr. Keita Deming. Welcome, welcome to the studios of Freedom 106.5 FM.
Thank you for having me. One thing off the bat, you don't need to call me doctor. My name is Keita Deming.
Okay, just now, hold on a second. Hold on. Okay, so let's try that again. Good morning to you, Dr. Keita Deming. I mean, just a little while ago, you told me that it's okay. I don't need to call you doctor, but...
No need to call me doctor.
But out of respect, because it's a lot of work getting that title, not so?
Yeah, but I think it sets up a power structure that's unnecessary. And like you and I are meeting as equals in a conversation. So I really think it's just, first name, I just happened to sit in a chair right for a longer period than you did.
Okay, interesting.
It immediately sets up an inequality between us, and that if I'm true to what's making sure we have a good people are doing good things, you have to break down the power structures.
So. Interesting. So tell me a little bit about yourself. What made you decide to get into writing this particular book, and what was your journey like so far?
That's a long question. So I was born in... No, I'm joking. So we've been a number of years ago, we wrote a software program, and then it's done really well. So we were in the ed tech space. A lot of companies were using that technology, and I kind of decided I really like the workshop learning and training coaching side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Our clients were often struggling with how do they move from strategy to action. Their strategies weren't being implemented well. And I came up with a framework that was really simple. Our clients loved it. And we decided, you know what, we're going to teach our clients this framework.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept saying, hey, we want to read about this more. We want to learn about this more. And I didn't have time to write a book because I was busy working and busy running a company. And then COVID happened, and I was like, I decided to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the book during COVID. It's a COVID baby. The journey's been phenomenal. Whenever I get in front of stages and in front of people and tell them about the book, or people read the book, it's great. If you read the book, make sure you check on Amazon, Amazon.com, and give me a review. You can get it on Amazon.com. It's super easy to get. And there's an Audible
audio,
which is the thing that I find that really shocked me. I didn't notice, but a lot of people have been like saying, hey, it's the first time I'm hearing a Caribbean author or a Caribbean voice on a business book. And I didn't even think about that.
So the name of the book, Strategy to Action. Just to briefly talk about you do or deal with workplace learning. Can you describe what that means?
Yeah, so that was what my PhD was in.
Mm-hmm.
So my PhD was all about how does learning happen within the workplace. And I think we don't do a very good job of that. And there are a lot of ways in which we can make organizations feel more welcoming, people can enjoy their work, but we have to do some hard work that it often involves learning. So workplace learning, I think, is a secret source of organizations, and organizations that really lean into that, they can be really high performing and great places to work. But too many of us play lip service to that. So my entire PhD was around how learning is so important in the place of work.
You could tell us about your transition from academia to becoming an educator and a coach, and how this journey influenced the development of this book, Strategy to Action.
So, I don't know how many of you know my grandmother. Her name is Hannah Deming, and she was the principal of Bishop Centenary College. And she died during COVID while I was writing this book.
Mm.
And in reflecting on her death, first of all, because it was COVID and I live in Toronto, I couldn't fly back home for a funeral. And never in my life would I have thought I would have missed my grandmother's funeral. And so that was a tough moment for me. And so I reflected a lot on her, and I realized our family has been a family of educators. That's what we've done for the last three generations. So she was the principal of Bishop Centenary College. And there's a great story where the bishop came to her and said, hey, Hannah, we need to close this girls' school because we don't have enough money. And she said, you're not closing an all-girls school in the year of International Women under my watch.
Mm.
And then she went out and got money and kept that school open. And our building is now named after her. So and then my dad sold insurance, and he always said, insurance is not about, insurance is about educating people about how do they protect the people they love the most. And he considered himself an educator. And I realized I come from a family of educators. And the academic world wasn't doing it for me. So I decided, you know what, I want to join the entrepreneurial world and I want to help more people, because I find there's too many barriers in academia for people to get access to that content.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted to do education for that makes an impact, makes a difference, and they want as many barriers. So the barrier for this is like, you got to buy my book, which is 200 TTE. But and I'm charging because I got to pay for the printing. Or your barrier is you do a workshop with me, or companies hire me and then we work together. That's the barrier. Whereas in academia, first of all, they write in a way that none of us can understand, which is number one.
That is true. Right. Yeah, you need a thesaurus and a dictionary at the side of you when you're going through their language.
So even writing this book, I had to unlearn how to write like an academic and all of that. Because I just really believe that, and I don't mean knowledge, I don't mean education as formal education, but learning is the key to building a better life, to building freedom, etc. If you're not learning, you're dying.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting worse. And if you're not learning, your competition is learning. So you better be on a learning train. So I really embraced that and tried to be saying, like, how do we use learning as this vehicle to make whoever I'm working with, help them be a little bit better? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what happened there.
And in your book, you emphasize the importance of aligning short-term activities with long-term objectives. Can you tell us the importance of this?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Most of us, unfortunately, play a short game in life.
Hmm.
We're trying to survive this week, this month, this quarter. Very few of us are saying, this is what I want my life to look like in 5 years. And I'm being very radical and disciplined about the things I need to cut out in order to get there. Having said that, the two things I want to say. Number one, our brains work against us in general under good circumstances. Our brains are wired for the short term. That's what the science teaches us. Our brains are wired. And yesterday I gave a talk and I talked about how burgers and bears beat bikes and burpees every single day. We will always choose to go for burgers and bears with our friends and going and doing like a 45-minute bike ride or doing 100 burpees, especially burpees. Most people hate burpees.
If you don't know
what a burpee is, it's basically a push-up
into a jump.
Jumping jack, basically.
Yeah.
And your chest has to touch the ground and stuff. Anyway, it's crazy. But my point is, we're wired for the short term. And here's the second piece that's crazy about that. Our brains are already wired for the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're under stress, if you're under financial constraints, if you're under time constraints, if you're under cognitive constraints, your brain is overloaded because you got so much going on. What that does is that additionally forces you to be even more short-term. So if you are stressed in any way, time-constrained in any way, your brain is working against you twice.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's wired for short-term because of how evolution worked. And then secondly, when we're stressed, we become even more short-term. So for us to come out of a difficult situation or something we're in, that is a very hard cognitive jump. And I really want to give a tool that help people make that easier. And how I described it is I wanted a tool that help people make the future drive the present.
Mm.
So wherever you want to be in the future, that was driving
The actions
that you do on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially what we were doing, what the book did.
So from what you just said, do you think that society's pressures and benchmarks along the way, okay, so by the age of 25, you're supposed to have a job. By the age of 35, house and family, and 40, you're preparing for retirement, and then retirement comes.
Yeah.
Do you think that those societal benchmarks has a lot to do with the the anxiety of actually getting things done in the short term?
I think there's somebody you might know. His name is Bob Marley. And he has a line where he says, we have to free ourselves from mental slavery. And it's one of my favorite lines because the world is constantly educating us. Mm-hmm. Some people say propaganda, some people say brainwashing us, whatever. I think there are three games we all have to navigate, we all have to play. The first game is we all have to play the long game. We all have to play an infinite game, mm-hmm. which means we have to be playing for the sum of more than ourselves, and we have to play our game. You can't get caught up in... There's so many people I look at who I think are ahead of me in terms of finance, where they want to be, number of kids. I have a 5-year-old kid. I have kids who have, like, 21-year-old kids. Like, mm-hmm. Some of my friends who became doctors and lawyers out of school, and I didn't take that path. I took a very different path. I'm now an author and all of that. I have to do my journey.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, the hardest question I think many of us have to figure out is, what do I want?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, answer that question in your head right now. What do you want? And then, are you prepared to go through the pain and the hard things you have to do to get that? If the answer to that is no, that's not what you want.
Yeah.
You don't want that. Mm-hmm. So there's a thing that I like to talk about where people confuse options and choices. So if I decide I want to run a 5K, I have no choice but to run twice a week or three times a week to prepare for that 5K. Maybe not 5K. Some people could get off the bed and run a 5K.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a half marathon or marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I have to train 3 days a week. If I'm not prepared to do that, I don't want to run a half marathon. It's not a choice. The minute I choose the marathon, I am choosing running 3 days a week. And it's the same thing with your life goals. If you say, like, hey, I want this particular goal, there's certain things that then become non-choices.
Mm-hmm.
The options that you have are, when I'm training, am I going to train at 50% or am I going to train at 70%? Or am I going to train at 100%? Those are your options. But you have no choice but to train 3 days a week. And that's what happens with our life goals. Our life goals, we do things and we say we want things. But when I look at your calendar, I look at how you spend your day, I'm not seeing anything that reflects that you're going
that
after
you want
this thing.
It.
You're going, if you really want this thing, show me the work.
Mm-hmm.
Show me the commitment.
That comes like if it is you spend time on your phone and social media and all of that. I will take a little 15 minutes here, 20 minutes here. When you look at it over a course of a whole week, it adds up. And then you realize, you know, you're really wasting time and probably could be doing something better with the time. Now, I recognize that about myself when it is on this thing called the phone. So what I try to do is look into material that would edify well, my goal is to do jewelry and all of that, right? I have that. So I tend to look at jewelry videos. I tend to look at entrepreneurial videos, things that will motivate me in that direction. So it wouldn't be so much of a waste of time. It would be downtime, but downtime with a purpose. So would that be a good way to kind of trick your mind into, yes, getting the downtime, but still being productive about it?
Yeah, so that's a slippery slope. That's a slippery slope. If you want to be doing the number one, I'm calling my book Strategy to Action. Because the most important piece there is after you figure out your strategy, start to take action.
Mm-hmm.
My guess, and I don't know you, is you've watched enough videos, you've watched enough jewelry videos to know where you're heading, what you're doing, except you've done that work.
Mm-hmm.
It was like when I was writing my thesis, my master's thesis, I went to my supervisor and said, I need to read these three more books. And he said, Keita, you don't need to read any more books. You have the best grades in the cohort. You've read this many books. Start writing. Stop reading.
Mm-hmm.
So many of us are at the place where I was at. Stop reading and start writing. Start doing, take the action, and you will learn in taking the action. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But you get more value from acting than you do from reaction. So one of the things I teach my son is I tell my son, he's 5, but so he doesn't really get this, but I say you have to spend twice as much time creating as you do consuming.
Mm-hmm.
If you create twice as much as you do consume, you're going to be fine, right? So I would challenge everybody to download an app on your phone that tracks how long you spend on your different apps, and then check that every week, and you will be shocked at how much time you're spending on those apps. Then once you do that, the next thing I would encourage you to do is get one of those apps that blocks the apps,
those apps
that are distracting you, so you don't have a choice. So my phone like has that. I can't be on Instagram for more than 20 minutes a day. It's just not. I've set up my life. It is not possible. WhatsApp in Trinidad is the devil. I mute so.
But it's one of the forms of communication that seems to work in TNT for
But it is such a. I met somebody yesterday and I looked at her WhatsApp and she's like, she had 761 messages because we were at this conference, and she said, "This is what happens to my WhatsApp when I'm not paying attention." You had 761 messages in one day. What are you getting done if you're spending every single day checking
messages,
761 messages? What do you do? You're distracted. I hate to bring you this news, but you are 100% distracted. I block WhatsApp from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. My WhatsApp is blocked. So people are like, "Hey, I was messaging you." That I'm like, I'll talk to you at 9 o'clock.
Set a time. That is interesting. That is really interesting. But you see, Gabby's laughing, right? Because part of our job, we need this WhatsApp connection because that's how we communicate.
Right.
So I guess it's really where it applies in terms of the job or the function that you're really looking to put in place. Because if I don't check that WhatsApp, check your phone. We're sending you messages. So
right, but I'm willing to bet.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet you have like 10 group chats on that. Am I?
Is it 10? It's probably a little more.
Probably more group chats, right? You could probably whittle that down to like muting a whole bunch of those to the ones that are absolutely essential. You could. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're focused on the ones that really pertain to your job. The rest of them are distractions.
Yeah. And I'm glad I'll be going into this because my next question would have been about the process and the need to identify and build the right systems so that people can be, as you say, more intentional with their time and where they place it. Do you have any more tips to how we can create that process?
So I really believe in design. So design the environment for success. So for example, you're trying to lose weight, don't have any junk food in the house. Like, don't even bring the junk food in the house. Then,
so when that hits you, when you're home and you're craving.
Something. Thank you, yes.
But here's the thing. If you don't buy it, right? Let's say you don't buy the junk food. Because you don't buy it. Sorry, let's do it the other way. Let's say you buy the junk food, right? You buy a package of, I don't know, what would be your junk food? I don't know.
Chocolate.
Let's say you buy 3 bars of chocolate, right? It's in your house. You have it there for the month. Over the month now, you eat that chocolate. You've eaten 3 bars of chocolate in that month. You don't buy it. Okay. Oh, I can't have it. I don't have it in the house. Cool. For you to get it, you have to leave your house, go in the grocery store, get it, and then come back. You've created so much resistance that chances are you're probably going
to
eat 1 chocolate bar versus 3.
Go to the grocery
just for the main purpose of satisfying that craving.
You're likely to go less, is my point.
Yes.
You're likely to go less because you've created a friction point.
Yeah. So okay, I understand.
What you have to do is the behaviors you want to decrease. You want to put friction between that. The behaviors you want to increase, you want to make them as easy as possible. So, for example, pack your bag for the gym the night before, have a friend meet you and pick you up and all of that. You create all these scenarios where it's way easier for me to do the behavior that I want.
Okay.
And then the behaviors you don't want to do, you put all kind of barriers in it. So, like, people freeze their credit cards. People like me, I have an app on my phone that I set up that limit this app. And I set it up so like I have to change it. If I change it, it changes in 48 hours. Right? So I've set it up already that like I don't really have a choice. Well, somebody's WhatsApping you. Look, I'm going to have to call you because my WhatsApp is frozen for the next 48 hours.
That is a lot of discipline now, because
it's not
48 hours in my mind. 48 hours without WhatsApp, you want my bosses to be like, "Where are you?" You know.
But here's the other piece.
It's, I guess, the conditioning too as
well. But here's the other piece around this, and this is unfortunate. So I live in Toronto, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
And in Toronto, we don't use WhatsApp in the same way that we use in Trinidad. So the part of your problem is that the leaders in our country don't understand what it means to be productive and how certain practices we have make people less productive. So, for example, if I have notifications coming in every 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
there's no way I'm as productive as if I have quiet time for 3 hours. There's just no way.
True.
It's mm-hmm. just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the culture here and people don't understand what it means to be productive and what it takes to be productive, we have a top-down problem where people expect you to be accessible 24/7. In my company, we give everybody focus time.
Mm.
And you put it in your calendar, and that's time where you focus and nobody's allowed to call you. You shut off your phone, etc., because we want you to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
That we saw more productivity from that in our company than anything else we've done. And we focus on helping people change their habits to get more of what they want. The problem is a lot of us have these bad habits, and we think
that we're being productive with those.
We're not. Right. You're being distracted.
Mm-hmm.
You're distracted.
That is an interesting concept. Very interesting. I have another one here for you. The concept of the four interlinked mindsets, future and today's ego, and today's and future wolf in your book, Strategy to Action. How do these mindsets interact with one another?
Yeah, so now I have to explain to people what the mindsets are, and then I can talk about what the interactions are. So the simplest way to think about this is that there are four things I think people need to think about. What's the future I want? Mm-hmm. That's a desired future. What am I prioritizing to help me get that desired future? So you got number one is desired future. Number two is prioritizing. Number three, how am I aligning my short-term actions in order to achieve what I say I want in the future?
Mm-hmm.
So the number three is prioritization. And then number four, how am I allocating resources in my world to help me get more of what I see I want to get, which is my desired future. So if you focus on those four things, what's your desired future? What are you prioritizing? How are you creating alignment in your life? And how are you allocating resources? It can be absolutely transformative.
Mm-hmm.
It also breaks your life down into four simple things that you're paying attention to. One of the challenges are all of us are trying to do all of these things and we're not focused. We're very distracted in our lives in general. The hardest part of that is getting very clear on what your desired future is. 5 years from now, I want to be X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to commit to doing that particular thing. Committing to that means I have to take things off my plate, and anything that doesn't help me get to that desired future is an absolute distraction. I'll give you an example. When I was doing my undergraduate degree, I was an academic probation. That basically means I had low grades, and they wanted to kick me out of school if I kept having low grades. Mm-hmm. That's basically what happened. I now had to explain to my Caribbean mother, if anybody knows my mom is no joke.
Any Caribbean mother. mine pop into the head one time too, so yeah.
I had to explain to my Caribbean mom who like, yo, this school just kicked me out of school because I didn't get grades. That was not happening.
Nope.
There's no way that was happening. Mm-hmm. So I got focused, and I put in my calendar 2 hours every hour of class. I put 2 hours to study. I stopped going out. I did all these things. I got super focused. The next semester I got A's.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, holy smokes. And then I started going out and doing things that didn't involve alcohol. So I didn't go to clubs and those kind of things. I started to dance salsa because salsa was a lot of fun, met a lot of girls. And there was not a lot of alcohol. You drank mostly water all night, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I could go out and have a great night, and the next morning I was productive. Like, I could work. I went from being a student on academic probation to a student who was getting straight A's. First time in my life I ever got straight A's.
Mm-hmm.
Was when I decided to zero in and focus. That was a 4 month period where I absolutely transformed my own life. Just by deciding to be very radical about how I align things. Mm-hmm. And people they're not willing to make those tough decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a doozer I'm going to give people. Here's a doozer. We will do this stuff for our kids. So we'll make our kids do all the hard work. You have to do this, this, and this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
But then to get it to do it for ourselves, we're not as disciplined.
Which is a strange Paradox.
Again, yeah. The first time I realized that was I was buying, my wife and I would bike a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I would buy like the cheap bike, cheap light for me because I don't need this like big expensive light. When I went to buy a light for my wife, I bought the big light to make sure she was safe and da da da. And I was like, holy shit. Why are you doing this? Did I just swear? Sorry.
Yes, you did. But you're so involved in the conversation, it kind of flew over me too, if you didn't bring it up.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes. What did I just do? And I realized I was buying the big light to make sure she was safe and protected because I didn't want to get hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't doing the same thing for me.
It's something that I've heard a lot is that you tend to show more affection and care for the person that you love rather than yourself. It seems to be tough to love yourself. And it's an idea that I've been playing with for a little while, you know, to really, focus on the small habits or the things that you do that would propel you into the position that you want to be. I guess, as you mentioned here, thinking about today and future situations and what you do in the present to make sure that you get to that point. So it's an interesting paradox.
Do you mind if we double click on that love yourself piece a bit?
Sure.
So the love yourself piece is really interesting.
Mm.
Because it shows up in two ways. For those of us who are driven and we have big dreams and we're ambitious, the love yourself piece is we don't take enough time to give ourselves the comforts of, like, so for example, I this is risky for me to say in Trinidad, but I've recently discovered the joys of manicure, pedicure. Like, it's an amazing experience.
But I get where you're going, right? Though.
Yeah. But you understand? Like, you understand? As somebody who's like 24/7, for me to go and get a massage, take a time to go get a massage, take a time to get like a manicure, pedicure, that's Batman thing in my brain.
Mm-hmm. But it is.
I'm successful people don't do that. You got to go, like, you got to be hustling, grinding, etc. And what I've learned is I need to love myself. I need to love myself by going for the run, eating well,
Drinking water. Yeah.
Drinking water. That's the love yourself piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other way you have to love yourself is I have a son. I'm very hard on myself, son. I have high standards, lots of love.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at like how he eats and how I eat, I make sure he eats all the like, like great vegetables, great
fruits,
and all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah.
So his diet is on point.
I do that with my daughter too.
But
yes.
My diet, when I look at my diet, I was sneaking a roti here, sneaking a thing here. But I wouldn't let him do that. The love yourself piece is, I have to love myself so much that I would be able to make the same hard decisions that I'm doing my son. I have to do that with myself.
For yourself, yeah. And then
that's
the idea of being selfish or you're being closed off when you're in that era of, okay, I have to focus. Because along the way, you tend to lose people who have that that perception that, oh, you feel you're better than everybody else, or you're not interacting and so on. That drive seems to be more displayed or conceived as arrogance rather than I'm focused, I've got this plan. And like you said in the beginning, you are more of a distraction than an addition to where I want to go, because you're going to tell me, oh gosh, look at how so-and-so party, you could go to this, and but I've got studying to do. And if I, you know, go to this party, I wouldn't be able to get up any morning and, you know, do the studying that is necessary for me to get to the point where I want to get. How do you deal with those kinds of comments, especially if it comes from, you know, your inner circle? You know, what tips do you have to encourage that?
First of all, change your circle, but that's a different point.
Mm.
In my book, there's an eagle and a wolf on the cover. And there's a great story of, I took a long time to decide what two animals I was going to use as metaphors in this thing. One was going to be a bird for sure, and the other one I didn't know, and I ended up choosing a wolf. One of the reasons I chose an eagle is there's a great story of a raven landing on the back of an eagle and starting to peck its neck. And the eagle decided, you know what, I'm just going to fly high.
Mm-hmm.
And the eagle keeps flying, and it gets to a point where the raven can no longer breathe in that air. Because eagles can fly way higher and the raven eventually falls off.
Mm.
When you decide to go after your goal and you decide to soar high, The ravens are going to peck at your neck.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to keep flying. You have a destination. You're clear about where you're going. People are going to tell you all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on a different journey to you. And that is completely okay.
Yeah, and that's one of the first things you said as well. Everybody has their own journey.
Your own journey. And I just, ironically, I just wrote an article about how it's okay to be selfish.
You know, that's not a concept that we would want to hear.
It's
a very strange concept because you actually feel guilty when it is you take care of yourself.
Let me explain to you why you shouldn't feel selfish about that. There's a book called The Selfish Gene. I don't recommend reading it. It's a very boring book. It's a biology book written by Richard Dawkins. It's a tough read.
Mm-hmm.
I read it because it's part of my PhD work. I was doing it. But it's a phenomenal book. In it, he tells the story of a group of birds that are infested by some ticks. And the ticks sit on the forehead of the bird. So the only way for that bird to come off is if another bird picks the pest off of the mm-hmm. tick off the forehead.
Mm-hmm.
And what he teaches is that in that colony, the colonies that survived, there were two kinds of birds, cheetahs and suckers. A cheetah is somebody who let other birds pick the tick off their head, mm-hmm. but they never return the favor. Mm-hmm. Suckers would pick anybody that comes to them, they were just like, I'll help you out. In situations like that, what happened is that the cheetah group grew so big and the entire colony died. It wasn't until you introduced a third group, which is a grudger, and a grudger remembers what you did last time.
Hmm.
And a grudger says, "Oh, you didn't help me last time, I'm not helping you this time." Hmm. And what happened in that context, where you have more grudges, those colonies thrived. But in any colony where you let cheetahs balloon, the entire colony collapses.
Hmm.
So what that teaches us from an evolutionary perspective is that it's okay to be selfish. I'm going to help you if you help me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that makes sure the entire colony thrives. Let's think about Trinidad for a second. I don't think it'd be hard to argue we've let too many cheetahs into our system.
I like how that ends this interview today. Lastly, can you tell me where Strategy to Action can be found and where they can purchase? Because I got a few messages already saying, yes, I would like to know where I can get this book. How can I attain it? Is it on Amazon?
I might need your help here, but it's at... you can get it at Amazon.com. You can also get it at Think Art Studios. They have some copies. And then there's a bookstore... a local bookstore, I'm forgetting the name. It's close to the Savannah. They used to be around. What is the name of the bookstore?
You know what? Send it to Gabby, and Gabby will send it to me.
That's awful. I can't remember.
And I will give all the information after.
I'm going there later today. But the easiest way, Amazon. I know Amazon is hard, but there are two bookstores in Trinidad that I have them. Anyway, thank you for having me.
Actually, I think we can, invite you again so that we could go deeper into the book, because I realize that there's some things that, you know, can shift thinking here in TNT. Yeah. I appreciate you coming, Dr. Deming.
Thank you. If you want to learn more, just visit keithdeming.com and you'll be able to find me more, or just search my name. My parents gave me a name that has a great SEO. I don't think they knew that, but it was great.
I know what you mean. TNT, thank you so much, Dr. Deming.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.